Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 20th of May, recording at 10:03 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, I hadn't meant to be hanging around all this long, believe it or not, but I did have to spend the entire morning at the hospital getting to see my surgeon chum. And I'm glad to report that all is progressing smoothly, albeit slowly. I'll just have the bandages for a few more weeks. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture, long-term outlook for the various different asset classes. But first, the highlights from today in the markets. First, the global stock market rally led by the US and European indices is still very much intact. It has slowed a bit in here, but that's hardly surprising given the short-term overbought indicators. It does require a clear downward dynamic to offset some further test of overhead resistance. Government bond yields, of course, that's been one of the big stories, that they have remained remarkably low, or some of us think remarkably low, I do obviously, against the background of circumstances. Now, they are back up into Greenspan's conundrum and desirous of losing money range, so a little bit more on that in a moment. Other factor here, the dollar pushed ahead strongly today and broke out on the upside on the US dollar index, and the euro extended its overall decline against the greenback, as did a number of other currencies. And that weighed on the precious metal markets, particularly silver, which had rebounded earlier in the week. Okay, let's get back to the big themes here in terms of global stock markets. Now, there are two that are really crucial. One is it a secular bear market, as I believe and have long maintained? In which case, I've defined the secular bear market as a generational long process of P-E ratio contraction. I wrote a lot about that today in Comment of the Day. Now, if it is, that means that equities, at least U.S. equities, are in for a re-rating. And it's a re-rating on the downside. Now, it isn't just Wall Street that faces that. It always happens after markets have experienced bubbles. For instance, there's a letter on the New Zealand stock market today and a question, why was the yield so attractive? And you can imagine how much more attractive the yield was back in 2003. I didn't happen to look at it back then, but it could only have been better. And one reason for that is that New Zealand did go through what on the monthly chart that I posted looks like very much of a secular bear market before finally breaking up out of the range in late 2003. And in a secular bear market, expectations decline, people become disillusioned, valuation increases, sets the stage for another very good advance, indeed a secular bull market. So we've seen plenty of examples of this actually taking place. I would say that some of the Asian markets, remember they had their Asian crisis, 1997. I'm thinking now particularly of the little tigers, so-called little tigers. Then they saw quite a substantial stock market recovery as Wall Street was going gangbusters in the late 1990s, but then came slumping back down with everything else in 2000, 2001 into 2002 during that very bearish phase, and that produced extremely good valuations. And indeed, I've commented on that recently, and if you look at that table that I posted yesterday that Owen had prepared, and you see some quite attractive valuations for some of those Asian tigers. And I think I quoted Ramesh Chandramani in saying that really in the years that he's been in the business that he hasn't seen better valuations in some of those countries. So you get a long period of underperformance, and that's exactly what happens. You do get the good, attractive valuations. So obviously, there are very different valuations among the various different stock markets around the world, and it's very, very important for all of us as investors to know about that. And where we see the good valuations, that is almost certainly where we're going to see the good potential when we next get an overall stock market move. And it may mean that there's somewhat better protection in those markets. Certainly, there's better yield during the fallow periods. Now, the other factor that I've always mentioned here is this Wall Street leash effect. If Wall Street, well, given Wall Street's size and influence, it has always had a major influence on other stock markets. And basically, what I've been saying, I'm talking about the Wall Street leash and saying that when Wall Street was moving sideways, let alone rallying, that tended to loosen the leash on other markets, and a number of them could do quite well. Conversely, when Wall Street was weak or investors feared a decline on Wall Street, then the leash was reined in. And indeed, if Wall Street fell quite sharply, frightening investors, then some of those better valuation and more interesting growth stories perhaps would do even worse very temporarily before rebounding once again. Okay. So that's an important theme. And another one, which is of more immediate concern, is what is the outlook here for interest rates right now? And if the consensus view has waxed and waned on this, as will not have escaped your attention. And for instance, when we go back to March, and then a lot of people, beforehand, a lot of people were saying that the Fed would be moving interest rates steadily upwards, and I think the biggest bears were saying that we'd see 5% or more sometime in 2006. Then Wall Street and other stock markets came down quite sharply, and people said, well, that's it, it's all over. The ECB is about to cut rates, so is the Bank of England Monetary Policy Committee, and Greenspan will confine his additional increases to a quarter to half a point. And 25 to 50 basis points, in other words. Now, stock markets liked that, and a lot of investors said, right, we are quite close to a downward cycle in interest rates. Well, I'm not at all so sure about that. And there are a number of reasons. First, stock markets have rebounded. They did not tank and will not tank, in my view, can get a shakeout, as we saw, and a sharp shakeout, but they will not tank if those government bond yields remain low. In other words, government bond prices are really quite firm. Why? Because, for one, that will show that investors are not in a flap over interest rates, and it will also mean that bond yields are not creating competition for equities in terms of yield. Now, I did mention that we're back in the danger territory that Greenspan had been talking about. Now, Greenspan cannot be thrilled to have long-dated government bond yields at this level, let alone go lower, which a lot of people are now forecasting. I am not among them. And the reason for that, and just before I started this audio, I saw a headline flash by on Bloomberg saying that Greenspan was saying that there was froth in there was or some froth in the US property market. Well, you bet there is, and that's what does concern the Fed. So the Fed is not about to lower interest rates and pump up that housing market bubble even further. Now, he doesn't want to cause that to come crashing down, and would be sensitive on interest rates. But the fact that long-dated government bond yields are as low as they actually are does not mean that Greenspan is about to stop raising interest rates. It makes it more likely that Greenspan will go on and raise interest rates. Now, the only exception to that would be if we suddenly get economic data coming out suggesting that the US economy is tanking, and I think that is very, very unlikely. Are we getting a slowdown, some evidence of a slowdown? Sure. That was predictable enough, but it is still chugging along in muddle through territory, if not better. So I think it's a little bit too soon here, and I said yesterday I think that one of the paradoxes may be the stock market rallies back up. People say, oh, that's okay. They start becoming more optimistic about the economic outlook for the US economy, for corporate profits, and then suddenly get a wake-up call as they begin to realize that the Fed's going to be raising interest rates more than they'd actually expected. So this is a tricky period in here overall. Now, what happens with stock markets here in the short term? And this is, I say, this has been an impressive rally in here, particularly for the European markets and on Wall Street. Although, put it in perspective here, the Nasdaq has regained loss less than half of its overall decline. I think that decline started in January, but it's been an impressive rally, and that does raise the very legitimate question: am I being too cautious or bearish in here? Well, and everybody else out there around the world is saying, is the overall upward trend that we saw from March 2003 going to be reaffirmed? And are we going to get meaningful gains in here against the background of some of these favorable valuations that you see in a number of countries, if not Wall Street? Or will Greenspan be lax enough in terms of monetary policy to have the enable Wall Street to move higher in here? Well, a lot of people hold that view, and a lot of people would like that to be the view, but that doesn't make it happen. And I would be very wary of drawing that conclusion at this stage. I maintain these first 2 years of a new presidential cycle, they are risky, particularly if you have the background of a tighter interest rate policy, and it would be premature, as I've already said, to look beyond the peak in those interest rates, because we don't know yet where that peak is going to be, or I certainly don't, and I don't think Greenspan does, but which means that I don't think that it is one more hike or two more hikes away necessarily. Okay, and in terms of these government bond yields, I mean, really, if they're back up into the desirous of losing money, that's another Greenspan quote, the conundrum levels in here, and it's not just US bonds. Really, these yields are kind of priced for perfection for bond markets, which means no inflation and also very, very weak economic growth, and also assumes an appetite to pick up all the supply. And I think people are a little bit complacent about the extent to which the Chinese and the Japanese will be going on and buying these bonds. For one thing, with the dollar rallying right now, will they actually need to do so to keep their own currencies from appreciating against the greenback? Well, the argument is less compelling for them to go on buying U.S. Treasuries, isn't it? Okay, let's move on here to the currency, and I have said throughout this ranging phase here that there is no evidence that the dollar's rally is over. And quite the opposite, the dollar has reaffirmed its rally in here today, and we should play that accordingly. I'm regretting having taken the profit on my dollar long against the yen yesterday, or was it the day before? I think it was the day before, seeing it bounding up in here again today, closing at 108.16. And I think, well, I'm a little bit reluctant to come in when that's testing some prior resistance, but I think if I do anything in currencies, and I should, particularly to hedge, say, my silver position, it really needs to be a long dollar position. And looking at the precious metals in here, and I was talking with one of the precious metal fund managers today, and he was saying, well, you know, it's a bit discouraging in here because some of our people who came in around the high or down say 25%, and you know, this is a volatile sector, mainly in the shares in those markets. Again, I want to just reiterate some of the points behind this. Oh, secular bull market in gold. Remember, we had the 21-year bear market, and gold became historically cheap, record cheap, against just about every financial asset that you could name and property. Now, these moves are cyclical. And I maintain that gold is in the early stages of a secular bull market that commenced in 2001 and has led to a substantial recovery, but not beyond the point where gold is still really very cheap, and it's been mostly a move against the US dollar. Now, I've said for quite some time that I think that central banks have sown the seeds for the next inflationary cycle through all the credit creation that has fueled a number of bubbles around the world, not least in some property markets, and that we were not going to get the deflationary depression that many people were talking about or fearing, because central banks, given the choice, and the choice is theirs, will opt. In other words, inflation and deflation and deflation are monetary problems in the overwhelming number of instances. It would take something like a horrendous plague or doomsday rock or something like that to change that script. So it's a monetary phenomenon, inflation or deflation, and the central banks are going to opt for inflation every single time over deflation. And they've been playing a bit fast and loose here, partly because with the global manufacturing competition from China in particular, they could see that there was no inflationary pressure to speak of in manufactured goods. That doesn't apply to all manufactured goods. Look at that story on the tires for the mining equipment that I posted in here today. So there are pockets, but those of you, as I've said over and over again, who pay the household bills will know that the inflation that you're experiencing is just vastly greater than the official statistics that are actually reported, whether it's medical bills or whether it's school fees or whether it's taxes that you're paying or whether it's insurance policy, food, and so on. Okay, so for me, that's a bearish argument for government bonds for sure. Now, the currencies in here, again, I've talked about the dollar rallying further. I think that's really the big story of the moment, and I don't know how far that's going to carry. All I can say is that there's absolutely no sign that this rally is over. I suspect it's no more than a medium-term move, and even if the dollar has begun the bottoming out process, now I'm not changing my mind on this. My view on this would be that we get mostly a ranging year, and that we would see we could see a further technical rally by the dollar, and then it would come back down after that medium-term move on the upside, and retest its lows, and probably move a little bit lower, get down to that those historic levels, 78 to 80 on the dollar index at least. I think that's still likely. What I would say is that would still be likely even if the dollar had commenced its bottoming out process, and there's a hint of technical evidence that that may be the case. But bottoming out, the dollar's bottoming out and topping out phases have been really quite lengthy more often than not, and I wouldn't expect this to be any exception. Moving on to the precious metals, which I was talking about, and I feel that once that dollar rally does peak, once we get some technical evidence that the dollar's rally has peaked, then that should be a very good buying opportunity in these precious metals and a number of the companies that mine them. And a lot of those gold and silver mines have really been battered in here. Again, it's a hugely volatile sector. It's as volatile as any sector going historically. And it's time to start thinking. People are still coming out of those markets discouraged about them. That's the time to be looking at them. And I'm talking about the big classy companies, the Newmont Mining and so on. When it's time to go back into those golds, and I wouldn't say the time is now, then I think it's probably a good idea to start with the with the major mines, with to make the more conservative choice. It isn't until the run gets underway, I think, that the more speculative minds come in and pick up the running and do far better. But I don't want to get too far ahead of myself at this stage, but I do want to emphasize the secular bull market overall for these precious metals. And then, of course, there's the supply and elasticity theme involving virtually all of these industrial commodities. Crude oil, I wouldn't be surprised if we aren't. Well, I think we're quite close to the bottom area for crude oil. Even if we get a little overshoot, I'd be surprised to see it get back down to 40. I think we've probably seen most of the correction that we're likely to see. Now, I'm not of any sort of hard landing school regarding China. I think China will certainly continue to show a high growth rate over the next few years. I think that's probably secure through at least the Olympics in 2008. I don't see China making any great big blunder in here, and it should be able to stave off an accident in the banking system or anywhere else over the medium term. That would always be the case, but the point I'm trying to emphasize here is that I think China will be a major consumer of resources over the medium term. Now, there's a report again posted here today, just pointing out, it was Christopher Wood's Greed and Fear, pointing out that Chinese companies have suffered from the rise in commodity prices, and if the companies are suffering, it may mean a little bit less consumption of that, or there could even be some selling of those commodities. But I think that would be a very temporary, short-term phenomenon. In other words, I'm trying to say the supply and elasticity theme is certainly going to be very viable and a major money-making opportunity for us over the medium to longer term. The danger here, in terms of those mining companies, is that at some stage during 2002, 2005, and 2006, we get at least one more sell-off in stock markets that's bigger than the one we saw from the March highs, and could be considerably bigger. And of course, that would drag them down, mining shares down, along with just about everything else. So we have to be a little bit careful in here over the next year and a half or so, at least. And of course, we'll have lots of time to update comments, and we'll monitor it every step of the way, won't we? So that's it, folks. Have an absolutely splendid weekend.